ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed, universal heavyweight champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And Brett, this has been actually a pretty good week for Arizona Wildcats athletics. Baseball is in the College World Series. Football has landed some recruits. Basketball is doing their thing. And also ASU football is in a little bit of trouble. So, I mean, hey, not bad.
I mean, you know me. I'm not one that actively roots against ASU. But I'm also somebody that doesn't mind when what goes around comes around for people that right. talk smack and are in glass houses. And yeah,
it certainly seems that way. And we're going to talk about ASU a little bit later in this show. Like, that's not our lead because, hey, we're still it's Wildcat Radio. We're not going to talk about ASU to start. And baseball, we're going to talk to Brian J. Peterson from AZ Desert Swarm a little bit later in the show to talk about just, hey, Arizona's in the College World Series. They're playing Vanderbilt to start things off, see where things go. But Brett, there has been some pretty good news in Arizona Athletics. We'll start with football. Why not? Some recruiting news. Got a cornerback, Kyron Chambers, committed to Arizona over the last week. And if you're Arizona, and this is where, I guess, if you're looking at things, and it's still early in the Jed Fish era, right? But you feel like Don Brown, the defensive coordinator, he has a reputation. And defensive players, if they're coming to Arizona to play for Don Brown, you feel pretty good because that guy has, he has some just, like I said, reputation. He has that cachet that some new coaches may not have, and that's just a good pickup for Arizona.
Yeah, you know, a tall athletic corner, a guy that's, I think, a top 500 or 600 nationally recruit, basically a high three-star kind of along the lines of Jonah Coleman. Second highest, I think, according to 247 Sports. You know, you've seen a lot of positive momentum in terms of the buzz, if you can have momentum in terms of buzz, because you know me in the narrative game. I don't care for it. But
unless it's a good narrative, then you kind of
Rather have a good narrative than a bad narrative. So that's you know, guilty as charged. But, you know, this is kind of the first sign in a little while with all of these. There's been a lot of visits the last several weekends with a lot of big name talent, a lot of legit players. And you kind of are wondering when is that going to flip into some more actual commitments, right? And, you know, nothing is settled until they're, you know, literally signed and on campus, as we all know. But it's nice to see some of that positive narrative come to fruition in terms of recruiting. And I think there's another big group of people visiting this weekend, some more four-star guys that are coming, like Tyler Martin, the linebacker. There's a lot of things maybe on the precipice of happening, but it's such a weird post-COVID time. You don't know until it happens, but in this case, you know, we have a guy in there and he's our second highest recruit at a position where I think it's going to be a nice thing to have a nice, tall, athletic corner.
Yeah, it's the weird thing where when Kevin Sumlin was hired, for instance, you thought was like, hey, this guy has been, he was at A&M and he gets 5-star recruits. His recruiting was amazing. And you're hoping that he could bring that to Arizona. And he obviously didn't. But the first couple of classes, like Grant Cano was a 4-star, Booby Kirby was a 4-star, Bobby Wolf was a 4-star, if I remember right. You're like, okay, those are guys who they were recruiting to A&M. You say, hey, once Kevin Sumlin and that staff went to Arizona, they came to Tucson. But this group, where they're coming for Jed Fish, who has never been a head coach somewhere before. You know, Don Brown obviously was a defensive coordinator at Michigan. And there's talented coaches around the staff. But to get players like this, and until they sign on the dotted line, like, they're not officially Wildcats. We know that. But that narrative that you're talking about, that buzz that happens where, okay, this is what you were hoping for from a new coach. Like, the new coach is supposed to come in and have that level of, all right, things are better. Like, Arizona they're 12-game losers, right? Like, they have not won in almost more than basically a full season. And yet, if they can get some high 3-stars, maybe some 4-stars, like they're bringing you on campus, that's a good thing. And everything we're seeing, everything we're hearing about this coaching staff, and now this is the time where you hear all the good things, but it's all good. Like, there's nothing negative about this coaching staff, and right, unless they sign, it doesn't matter. They can say, hey, we loved our visit to Arizona and sign with Alabama or whoever it is. Like, it doesn't change anything. But if you're looking for that momentum, if you're looking for that narrative, when you hire a new coaching staff, you hire a new head coach and he brings in his staff, the hope is that they're going to have that buzz. And this coaching staff seems to have that with the players they're bringing in for visits. And when you read what they're saying about their time in Tucson, they're really excited about what they saw.
Yeah, I mean, Sterling Lane was on 247 Sports talking about his visit.
He's a four-star, right? Yeah.
He's a four-star guy who's taken unofficial visits to Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, Georgia. Like, and it sounds like that visit went really well, to your point. Like, everyone is saying that everything has gone well. I think I saw him in the interview with the 247 staff saying that Jed Fish is saying, don't commit until you're 100% committed.
Cool.
You know?
That's the way to go.
Which, like, and that's the right way, and that's on brand with the whole it's personal thing in my mind, and it's somebody that is saying, you know, it makes it easier to buy what Jed Fish is selling if he's gonna if you're an 0-12 team trying to build recruiting buzz and you're still telling guys like, don't just commit to us to like have a spot, right? Like, I personally like that approach. And you see that momentum. You see, I think Sean Miller, a big receiver, is coming this weekend. Different Sean Miller.
S-H-A-W-N, right?
Yeah. like Tyler Martin, I think, is coming this week. There's a Howard, I think, a pretty high three, low four-star safety is coming this weekend. There's all the Servite guys with the quarterback commit. There's a four, almost five-star receiver, well, McMillan.
You're missing the Servite guys, right? They're from Orange County. And that was last weekend, if I remember right. We're recording this on Friday, the 18th. But they brought them in. They had, like, the Orange County thing. And there's the quarterback who's already an Arizona commit, the receiver, the tight end, Cam Burnett. And they just – I don't know, Brett. Like, do you remember Arizona being, like, the images, like, the pictures you see on social media with – like, they had oranges. They did, like, the orange juice and the oranges.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember seeing that for Arizona Arizona recruiting? Because, like, I don't. I don't remember seeing Arizona go that, like, with the photos and everything like that we're seeing right now.
I think there's – those little things that are, I mean, they're, let's be blunt, they're fun little gimmicks.
They're silly. Like, yeah.
But the thing of those is if you follow the twitter.com machine, like I do, the people that are tweeting and retweeting those things out aren't the Arizona staff. It's the quarterback. I'm blanking on his last name, or I don't want to pronounce it.
Fafita, I think.
I won't
pronouncing his name until he's on campus, but he's good.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be really good.
Him, his family, other folks are like, the parents of Fafita are like, they're the ones tweeting this out and basically recruiting the other even higher end talent from Servite. Like, if you have, it's one thing to have your players, but if you have the family and the parents of people like actively promoting your program and you're 0-12 and they're trying to pull in 4- and 5-star guys for you, and you have a legit chance. There's something going on with the culture that Jed Fish is building that shows that people are buying what he is selling, right? Even if it's small gimmick things, if it's Gronk throwing water bottle or, you know, water balloon fights with the crowd at the spring game, you know, what he's trying to do seems to be working so far. I'll feel much better when there's a few, you know, a complete class and they're all signed on the dotted line and on campus. but man, you feel like there's a natural groundswell of momentum building in the program, football wise. And you feel like it's only a matter of time until we start to see more pops on commitments from fairly high guys. And the class right now already looks pretty good. And not to tease further, but there might be some more guys that become available in the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, this is kind of when Kevin Sumlin was hired, and I don't want to necessarily bring us back to that point, but the thought was, what is he going to be able to do? Right, this is a guy who has a reputation for bringing in high-quality classes. He did at A&M, right? He was going to Arizona and taking some of the best talent. And when Jed Fish was hired, I was like, Jed Fish? What is this guy going to be able to do? And what he's done to this point has been phenomenal, right? Like, the narrative has changed. He's been great. But in terms of recruiting, it's like, okay, this is his first full class. What can he accomplish? And he hasn't done much yet. You know, the players he's got, like, there's some pretty good commitments. We mentioned Keon Chambers. Like, there's some good commitments, but we're not there yet with Jed Fish. Doesn't mean we won't get there with him. And I feel like this is this situation where this was the expectation for Kevin Sumlin. This was bring four, not necessarily five-star talent. This is Arizona. We know that. that brings some 4-star recruits and nab a few of them. And the ones he got were the guys who were going to commit to A&M before he left, or before he was fired. I guess if we're trying to be the most honest here. But it's really interesting to see how Jed Fish, who's basically doing this from the ground up with his staff, can recruit. You know, because he doesn't have the reputation from being at a head coach at some other school, a Power 5 school, SEC school. He's Jed Fish. And all the concerns every one of us had when he got hired is like, Jed Fish? What? Like, who? Like, his history, his background, like, this is the guy? And up to this point, he's done everything right. And you feel really good about him. And then you see the type of players they're bringing on campus. And bringing them on campus doesn't mean they're going to get them. But even Rich Rod used to say that was the biggest trick, right? If you could get them to Tucson, there's a really good chance they can commit. Maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't. But it seems like, I mean, we're here in mid-June, getting close to late June, and Jed Fish has done everything right. Like, if you look at what he's done and that coaching staff has done, it's hard to have a complaint about anything.
Yeah, and it's such a weird recruiting offseason with COVID and the extended dead period, shall we say.
For programs that don't recruit during the dead period. Like, that's, yeah.
Or that don't blatantly cheat.
We'll get to that a little bit later.
Blatantly and loudly cheat. You know, like, we're 2.5 months from the first game against BYU. It's at this point in most recruiting cycles, you'd have more commitments for most programs, but everybody's taking all their visits, and Arizona's getting more than their fair share of talent. And there seems to be a lot of buzz coming out of that. You know, we'll see, especially with those 4-star type guys and high 3-stars, a lot of them are going to wait, but you got to wonder, you know, with all of the, to your point, Jed Fish has done almost everything right. I actually can't think of anything he's not done right so far, in terms of the coaching staff and how he's approaching things. And I see there's a lot of positive momentum, and boy, if you come out in the BYU game and show you're not like the team that's lost 12 straight games and you're going to be a tough out, I wonder if that's going to cause a lot of dominoes to fall in terms of guys that are on the fence or thinking about committing to commit. If you're even competitive in that game, in game one, you know, there's, of course, the counter to that is also true. If you go out and get blown out like 56-3.
But isn't that the thing, though, right now, where it's like Arizona's lost 12 straight games? We all know that. It's Arizona, but it doesn't feel like Arizona's rock bottom, right? It feels like at this point, as we sit here in mid-June, that Arizona's on the upswing. And it's almost like whatever happens in the regular season, none of us are saying, hey, they need to win 5 games, 6 games to feel good about them. If they win like 4 games but are competitive, people are like, hey, yeah, that's a hell of a season. That's, I mean, good job, Jed Fish. You walked into that situation. But, you know, like, they picked up a linebacker, Rashee Hodge Jr. from New Mexico State, right? Like, there's some positive momentum. And when we last saw Arizona in a game that, let's be honest, may not count in a few weeks' time, we don't know.
I was going to say, 12 straight losses? Is it really going to be 10 straight in a few
like,
months?
We don't know exactly what that number will be. But if you were looking in, Brett, you've talked many times, you don't like the narrative game. And I'm not a big fan of the narrative game either, right? Like, you either win or you lose. But if you're Jed Fish, everything that's happened since the time he was hired, which was right before Christmas of 2020 to mid-June 2021, you feel good about things. Now, does that mean that you look at this roster and say, hey, they're going to win more games than we think? We haven't made our predictions yet. That'll happen later in Wildcat Radio 2.0 over the course of the summer. We're not doing that yet. But you feel good. And like, that's how many people feel good about a program that's lost 12 straight games? Right?
If you went back 6-7 months ago, or right before even, or right after the Jed Fish hire, is there any way you would have thought it's mid-June and, you know what, I feel pretty good about the football program?
People can go
right
back
now
and look on, like, check on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get Wildcat Radio 2.0. You can find our podcast. Listen to what we had to say. Like, hold us accountable.
Yeah. You know, it's like I said, the narrative doesn't mean anything until you win games. But when you're a new head coach that hasn't even gotten to coach a game, it can start to show up in more tangible ways through recruiting, right? And you're starting to see that pop with Kyron Chambers. You're starting to see that with, you know, the glowing reviews coming out of some real talent, and like, mm-hmm, some of the big national guys on the recruiting guys are saying that like, Arizona's legit in this for a lot of guys that are, you know, would have been there. These aren't your 5'6" receiver OKG types.
No.
Right.
No,
it's a different, and you know, we've talked about it before. The difference between a top 500, 700, even a top 1,000 three-star recruit versus like the low three-star can be, you know, a world of difference. Like, stars don't matter to some extent, but guess what? They also do. Like, there's a correlation there, right?
Absolutely. I'd rather have more 4 and 5 stars than 2 and 3 stars, but yeah. Coaching makes that difference in football more than I think many other sports. But let's transition really quickly to basketball. Arizona Basketball picked up a walk on Addison Arnold this last week. He's a point guard who has a really good story. And obviously you don't expect, it's Arizona Basketball, you don't expect walk-ons to be big time players for the program, but you look at that, Addison Arnold, like, you look at his background, like, hey, this guy's pretty good. Like, he's had some success where he was injured. When he came back, he's averaging 23 points, almost 9 rebounds, and 3 assists and 2 steals a game as a point guard. But that's depth, and also Arizona now being able to get out on the recruiting trail, and, you know, Tommy Lloyd, his first chance to get out there for Arizona's head coach and try to find guys. It's the running joke has been he doesn't recruit outside of, you know, well, he doesn't recruit inside of the continental United States, right? That's been the joke. And sure, his background is that, but until he starts signing guys, you got Keir, who is a transfer from Georgia. But it's really an exciting time for Arizona basketball to see what they can do with this new coach. You know, Addison Arnold is not the best they can do, I would hope, and not to knock him. But he's a good walk-on, a quality walk-on, and now Tommy Lloyd and that staff is going out there trying to find more guys for 2022-2023.
Yeah, you know, I think Kyer fills one of the two holes we've talked about. I still have concerns about front court depth. But Addison Arnold, to me, feels like a Max Hazard type of walk-on.
A quality walk-on, though.
Like Max Hazard was a walk-on at Arizona, but like that, he could have played at a smaller school, right? Like he was like a legit kind of guy that's, you know, he'd smoke most people in a pickup game. Let's just put it that way.
That's not exactly a barometer you want to judge Arizona basketball players.
Well, I mean, in a legit
I played pickup games, and
he would beat you. But no, yeah, I'm Addison sure. Arnold, or it's you know, somewhere between, like, he could, especially in the way the Arizona roster is, you could see him being like a Brett Brillmeyer potential guy that maybe gets spot minutes. Like, if he's playing more than, you know, 10 games and averaging more than 5 minutes a game, you're probably having problems. But like, there's not going to be the dramatic drop off with him in terms of somebody that is there. The break glass.
There. I mean,
there's a break glass in case of emergency there, and it's not, you know, it's not a jar of confetti that's not going to do anything on the court, right?
Right. It's the clown who comes down from the ceiling who's been dead for 6 years. You're like, hey, finally, it's a party type of thing.
That got dark.
Is that a Family Guy episode that happened? They're like, yay. And then it's like, oh, no. Like, keep it up there for a while.
Yeah. Sorry. No, I mean, he's got legit size. He's, you know, he strikes me as somebody that could go play at a smaller program, but he probably sees an opportunity here. And honestly, for Arizona, they've got scholarships remaining where he might even be able to get a scholarship for a year at a real program, even if they're going to pull it for next year's class, assuming there's not some NCAA sanctions that limit scholarships. Right. So, you know, not anything. The reality is you hope he's not playing a lot of minutes, but you at least say, all right, if Kirk Carissa gets hurt or Justin Kyer gets hurt or they get in foul trouble, you're not completely screwed.
Yes, that's fair. But, you know, that's like a worst case scenario. Best case scenario for right now, we'll talk about Arizona Athletics. The baseball team, Brett, is in the College World Series. They are the 5 seed, but they are, I'm not going to say the favorite, but they have a chance to take the trophy home from Omaha. Let's talk to Brian J. Peterson from AZ Desert Storm after this break.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Wildcat Radio 2.0. And as promised, we are joined by Brian J. Peterson of azdesertswarm.com. He is one of our favorite baseball guys to go to. And we're talking to him, of course, because Arizona baseball is in the College World Series. That is this weekend. They are playing Vanderbilt. Brian, welcome to Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Yeah, I should say welcome back to Wildcat Radio 2.0. When we last talked to you, Arizona was getting ready for their tournament and everything. They had some, you know, the games at High Corbett Field last weekend. They were able to emerge from that region, from theirs, with a super regional by beating Ole Miss. It was a interesting series, you know, especially the third game. The clincher was a lot of fun, actually. Very anticlimactic, if you will. Yeah, it really was. But now Arizona, a quick summary of how they got to the College World Series, how they got to Omaha, where you are right now.
Gotcha. Well, they hosted the regionals 2 weeks ago as the number 5 overall seed. First time that they've been a national seed since that was put into play with super regionals in the 90s, in 1999. And it's the first time they've hosted since 2012. And they went 3-0 in their regional, beating Grand Canyon on the first night, and then UC Santa Barbara, a very good UC Santa Barbara team, Saturday, and then in the regional final on Sunday, with a mix of timely hitting and really, really good pitching, which is just kind of what's worked for them all year. In the middle, Garrett Irvin threw a 3-hit shutout. It was the first shutout in the postseason for Arizona since J.C. Cloney did so against Coastal Carolina in the 2016 College World Series. So that set up the Super Regional against Ole Miss, the number 12 seed. And Arizona won the first game. I want to say the score was 9-3, and they were down 3-0. And then they gave up 3 runs in the first inning and then ended up winning 9-3, which is kind of what they've done a lot this year. They've spotted teams' leads, and then they've come back. They didn't have the ability to do that the second game. They lost 12-3, and they were down 7-0 in the second inning, which completely derailed the plans that they had to try to work the count and get Ole Miss's ace pitcher, Doug Nikhazy, out of the game. It was working, but once you're down 7-0 after 2 innings, you kind of have to switch gears and become more aggressive, and they just weren't able to catch up. So that set up the rubber match on Sunday, where both teams were going to be having to patchwork together, staffs figure out what you want to do for pitching, and both teams ended up starting relievers. Ole Miss went really bold and put their closer in to start the game, whereas Arizona brought in a freshman named Dawson Nets, who has made a couple starts this year but never gone more than 2 innings, and ended up winning 16-3, just completely obliterating Ole Miss, scoring in almost every inning and getting strong pitching, because after Dawson Nets, they had TJ Nichols come in for 5 1/3 innings, and he only gave up a run and 3 hits. It was just strong all the way around. Everybody on the team got at least 1 hit except for 1 player. And several guys had 3 or 4 hits and 3 or 4 or 5 RBIs. It was a typical Arizona whooping type game.
Yeah, Brian, I was going to say, you know, we've heard about all year how Arizona's team is really, you know, credible 1 through 9 in terms of the hitting lineup, right? And it was a question of pitching. And would you say that game kind of revealed what the offensive upside is for the Arizona Wildcats in that beatdown?
Yeah. I mean, and people are seeing it now. Arizona's starting lineup features nine guys batting over 300. And the only one who doesn't have an on-base percentage of 400 or higher is Daniel Susak, the catcher, because he's been slumping a little bit lately. But he was the Pac-12 Freshman of the Year. And he and Jacob Berry were just named to Baseball America's second team for their All-America today. So it's a stacked lineup that has no holes in it and has no places that an opponent can really just kind of eat up a bunch of outs. And there's been some movement around of the lineup here and there, but there's a couple different combinations that they can go with where they don't have a situation where it's too many of one kind of player in one sense in a row in the lineup.
Yeah, and that lineup, as you saw, even the games they've lost, they've seemed to at least put some at-bats together, make some pitchers work. But moving forward now, they're in Omaha, the College World Series, and talk about the old baseball adage is good pitching will beat good hitting every time, great pitching will beat great hitting every time, right? And that's going to be tested this week and against Vanderbilt, who I know you can talk about these pitchers that they have that they're bringing in this one, because Arizona's offense, it's arguably the best offense in the field, but they might be facing two of the best pitchers that they would face in Omaha on Vanderbilt's staff.
Correct. Vanderbilt is known for their two frontline starting pitchers who are both going to get drafted probably in the first round next month. The guy that's almost certainly going to go against Arizona is a kid named Kumar Rocker. He's very big, very powerful. He throws hard. I've got his numbers right here in front of me. In 17 starts, he is 13-3 with a 2.46 ERA and 155 strikeouts in 106 innings. And he has been on the team since 2019, and he actually was, I believe he might have been the MVP of the College World Series as a true freshman when Vanderbilt won. They are the defending national champions because there wasn't a tournament last year. But I believe in June, which is when all the NCAA tournament games are, he's 6-0 as a starter. So this isn't a matter of he's just loaded up during the regular season and faltered. He gave up, I think, one run in the two games leading up to the College World Series this year. And he's got great stuff. And then the guy that's second that Arizona could face, but probably not, is the name will sound familiar. His name is Jack Leiter. He is the son of former major league pitcher Al Leiter. He is a sophomore, but he's draft eligible based on his age. He's 10-3 with a 2.16 ERA and 156 strikeouts in 96 innings. It's just ridiculous. Both these guys' opponents hit less than 160 against. Rocker threw a no-hitter in the Super Regionals in 2019. Leiter threw back-to-back no-hitters this season. In the middle of the season, I think one of them might have been a seven-inning game, but they're just ridiculously good. I just don't know. They face some good offenses, very good offenses actually in the SEC, but nothing that is a 1-9 like Arizona. And where I think Arizona can be advantageous in a matchup against one or the other is that they're willing to see pitches and even take pitches and take strikes early in the game to try to figure out the pitcher, to give the guys behind them in the lineup more chances to see what's coming, and just to wear them down. That's what they were doing against Ole Miss last week against Doug Nikhazy. They caused him to throw 54 pitches in the first two innings, and had Arizona not fallen behind 7-0, they would have kept doing that. Even still, he threw 122 pitches in 5 1/3 innings when most of that time Arizona was being aggressive at the plate. So they're going to make this pitcher work and earn another quality start.
Yeah, Brian, I think you maybe even undersold Rocker and Leiter. I'm looking at CBSSports.com, and their mock draft has them both drafted in the top seven. And mm-hmm. Jack Leiter, as you mentioned, is Al Leiter's son. I assume Kumar Rocker is not John Rocker's son. Is that correct?
He is not. That would be funny. But no, it is not. It's just a coincidence. Both of these guys also, they were studs out of high school, but they essentially told major league scouts and teams, don't draft us. We're going to Vanderbilt. Both of them got drafted, Leiter in the 20th round and Rocker in the 38th round. But basically, both of them said, there's no point in you wasting a draft pick on us. We're going to Vanderbilt, and we're going to spend 2-3 years there to be able to build ourselves up, because we believe that we are first-round picks. Like, if you want to draft us in the first round out of high school and pay us that kind of money, because I don't know if you've seen what the bonus slots are for first-round picks. The number one pick in this draft is going to get, I think, an $8.4 million signing bonus.
Not bad.
And it doesn't pay a lot. I mean, it's still over $5 million when you get into, like, the top 10 picks.
Yeah, but what's the salary, Brian? Come on. I mean, $5 million, they got a family to feed.
I know. That could just go like that. And that is something that I don't think a lot of people realize when it comes to baseball, is they get that big chunk, but then whatever team or level they end up at in the minors, unless they're able to negotiate a specific contract, which is rare, you get that with like the Bryce Harpers and the things like that, they may be making $1,500 a month playing at single A in June or July. But on the flip side, they also have all those millions right up front, whereas other guys on their team got $20,000 to sign and got the $1,500. So that's how it works out.
Yeah, I think you maybe already hinted at this, Brian, but it sounds like are you expecting Rocker to be the person to get the start against Arizona this coming weekend, or is there a chance of Arizona seeing both? And if to help the Arizona fans are going to watch the game, what kind of pitchers are these guys in terms of their stuff and how the Arizona hitters are going to want to approach it?
There's no way they'll see both of them, because they wouldn't want to. If they ended up using both of them, then they wouldn't be able to use either of them on Monday for their second game. It's just a matter of if they want to adjust the order. They've gone with Rocker first pretty much every time. Maybe not in the SEC tournament, because it was matchups for opponents, but in the regionals and super regionals, it's been Rocker on Friday and Leiter on Saturday. And during the SEC season, I'm pretty sure it was that way almost the whole time. So I'm expecting Rocker. Unless the Vanderbilt coaches see something about Leiter's stuff that works better with Arizona, which is possible, because he does have a little bit more of some off-speed pitches he's got. He apparently can throw a comeback type pitch that's in the 90s. I don't have his specific miles per hour or whatever in front of me, but he's got 3-4 pitches. They both do, but Rocker is much more about like going directly at you, and Leiter is more of a matter of he's going to get you to chase.
Okay, we're talking to Brian J. Peterson, AZ Desert Swarm. He is in Omaha covering the Wildcats on their College World Series run, and just you see pitchers like that, you talk about pitchers like that, and this does seem like that classic great offense, great pitching, and kind of wonder what kind of at-bats, because has Arizona even faced pitchers like this? I'm trying to think back. I was reading an article actually in The Athletic earlier this week that talked about like when it was Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole on UCLA, like they had their pair of aces and they did not win the College World Series. So just having two studs at the top of the rotation doesn't mean you're the best team there. But has Arizona's offense, which has been so good all season, faced anyone like these guys?
I mean, they faced some that are pretty good, but maybe not to this level. Possibly the best pitcher, well, other than Doug Nikhazy, that they've faced, that the Ole Miss guy, is a kid named Michael McGreevy from UC Santa Barbara that they faced the first of their two games in the regionals. He, on some of those same mock drafts, is a projected first-round pick who's got really, really good stuff. And Arizona got they won that game 4-0, and I think they got two runs off him, but he pretty much held them in check. I think they only had maybe 4 hits against him. They worked a couple counts to get some walks against him. During the Pac-12 season, Stanford's got two very good pitchers in Brendan Beck, who is he's the Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year, and Alex Williams. Those were the pitchers in the two games they lost in that series. So they managed to hit Beck a little bit. That game went to 11 innings. They weren't able to really do anything against Williams on Sunday. Oregon has two good starters, and Arizona was able to do a lot against one and not much against the other. Even the same when again, Oregon State has good pitching, and Arizona struggled against the starters in that series. But see, their goal in every game is to get the starters out before the sixth inning is over. And even if that means putting yourself behind and taking some pitches that you should swing at, that they'll do that just to be able to see what's going on. I don't know if you saw the pictures that Arizona Baseball put out on Twitter today from their workout at, I believe,
yeah,
those
were
in
shirts
Nebraska,
are great.
Omaha.
I want to spend money on one.
Yeah, and for anyone that's seen it, the shirt basically says it's a line drive or it's a ball. It might be the other way around, but that's essentially the Arizona is, if that ball is hittable, you need to hit it hard and you hit it on a line. And that'll work well at TD Ameritrade Park because it's a big park. It's bigger than most college parks, yet it's smaller than what Arizona plays in. So Arizona already knows how to play in a big park that you shouldn't be trying to hit it out of. Even though Arizona did hit a lot of home runs at High Corbett Field, that's not what they're known for. They lead the country in hits, runs, but also doubles and triples. So they make the most of the space they have. And so I think when you may see teams trying to play further in because of the size of the outfield, that leaves you susceptible to balls that are hit over you. Or if they play back, then you can just slap things and spray it in front of them. Arizona has no problem just going four straight singles if that's what it takes to get somebody in.
Small ball.
Well, it's not the true small ball, which is what Arizona used when they were here in 16 with a lot of bunts and moving runners over and things like that. Arizona is, like, really good at scoring guys from second on singles and going first to third on singles because they have strong base running. But it's not a matter of where they have to get all of their runs off of home runs. I think if you go and look throughout the season, the percentage of their runs that came off home runs is quite small considering how many runs they score per game.
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked a lot about Vanderbilt's pitching, Brian. How do you think Arizona's going to approach this game in terms of their pitching staff? You know, they kind of had a creative approach in the last game in the Super Regionals in terms of how they clearly had a plan in terms of who they were going to throw out there, like you talked about. How do you see them attacking Vanderbilt with their pitching staff on Saturday?
Well, though some people might not like to hear it, I don't see any way that it's not Chase Silseth, the regular game one starter all season going in the opener. And though he has struggled lately, he's had some of his worst outings lately. He only went 4 2/3 against Ole Miss. But he actually, in that game, he gave up 3 runs in the first inning, and he had runners on basically in every inning. But after getting out of that first one, he never put himself in any sort of, like, super danger. He worked around everything. He's had some trouble lately where he getting that out pitch, that his two-strike pitch has become a little too hittable. But Arizona does have, in most cases, the luxury of they can allow their pitchers to give up some hits and give up some runs because they score so much. I still think it'll be Silseth going for that game, and it's just going to be a matter of that he is going to have to make sure that all of his pitches count and that he's got to, if he does get somebody on, he has to avoid any sort of big innings. And then Garrett Irvin would be the second one, and he just came off his worst outing of the season against Ole Miss. He only went an inning and a third. He was just missing too much over the plate. He's got very good stuff. He's thrown 2 complete games this year. I don't know who he'll be facing. It could be Stanford, which he beat, or it could be NC State, which has a very good offense that just knocked off the number one seed. Arizona's not going to worry too much about that one. It should be Silseth. And then because they have a lot of guys in their bullpen who've started this year, like TJ Nichols, Chandler Murphy, Austin Smith, those kind of guys who can go 3-4 innings. Quinn Flanagan is another one. Arizona has the ability to, if, say Silseth is out in 3 innings, they've got somebody who can eat a bunch of innings before they get to the back end of their rotation. Plus they have a lot of mix and match so that when they get to that third game, which the earliest it would be is Wednesday, which is 3 days off in between the first and third game, you could bring Silseth back for that game. If Arizona wins its first 2, they get multiple days off. And that's why a team like Vanderbilt looks like a very strong candidate to win the title, because you can get by with only two really good starters. If you win those first two games, you can set yourself up that you might not need a third guy until the championship series.
And that would certainly be ideal if you're Arizona to find a way, especially if you can win on Saturday, beat Rocker, then you put yourself in a really good position because it's one of those probably confidence boosts. If you can get past him and get the W, then like that's arguably the best pitcher in the tournament, and you did the job there. But you talked a little bit earlier about that whole bracket. You got Stanford, NC State, as well as Vanderbilt and Arizona. If Arizona wins, or even if they lose, they could play one of those two teams. I think Stanford was one of the, what, two teams to win a series from Arizona in the Pac-12 this season. Is that right?
Correct.
So when you look at this, Arizona, they were the five seed. They're a really good baseball team. You don't get to this level at this point in the season in the tournament without being very, very good. And obviously their offense is arguably the best in the country right now, or the best of the teams that are left. I don't want to say how do you predict this whole thing in Omaha going, because there's a lot of unknowns. We don't know who their second game would be, yada, yada. But just if you're Arizona, you're looking at the Wildcats going into this College World Series, what do you think of their chances?
Well, I think the least likely scenario is the so-called two and barbecue, where you play two games, lose them both, and go home. Thank you for coming out. But that's going to happen to two teams in this field, and it's going to happen to two good teams, two teams that won a regional and won a super regional that in neither case lost more than one game, and now they would lose two. I don't see that happening to Arizona, because if you look at this season, they've only lost consecutive games three times, and the last time was in mid-April. And they tend to bounce back from those losses really well, especially if it's a blowout game, which was what you could categorize the middle game to Ole Miss. They lose that 12-3, they come back the next day 16-3. This season they've had six times where they've lost more than three runs, and the next game they've gone 5-1. The only loss was in extra innings at Grand Canyon during their three-game losing streak. But overall, in those games, they've averaged 13 runs a game and like 16 hits. So what they pride themselves on is not making one game factor into the next one. While you can maybe use some scouting and all that, you don't use any, oh, well, we played poorly in that one, so we're going to play poorly in this one. They treat each game completely separate, whether it's a win or a loss. They don't base any expectations off of that. And so I can't see them losing two in a row at any point in this tournament.
That should make it fun. Hopefully, you're right. Hopefully, they don't lose two at all. Brian J. Peterson, AZ Desert Storm. You can find him on Twitter at RealBJP. I know you're out in Omaha this weekend, or for at least the foreseeable future, right? You're going to be providing a ton of content that can be found on azdesertstorm.com.
Yes, yeah. I'll be here at least for the next 6 days, and each time Arizona wins, I'll just extend that stay. It could be 15 days. It'd be cool to see if it were 15. Yeah, I mean, the last time someone brought this up on Twitter the other day that I saw, it's really interesting. Going back to 1970, every other time Arizona makes the College World Series, they've won it. Well, they didn't win it the last time they were here. So if you believe in those kind of things, then Arizona's due to win it again.
I think we all want to believe in those kind of things, especially right now. Brian, hopefully we'll catch up with you again, hopefully, I guess, next week to preview even more Arizona baseball games. And then hopefully you come back to Arizona in a couple of weeks' time. But Brian Peterson, AZ Desert Storm, thank you for joining us on Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, that's Brian Peterson. When we come back, as promised, we will talk about that school up north that's in a little bit of trouble these days. Thanks again to Brian J. Peterson for that talk about Arizona Wildcats baseball, who I know we're all hoping has at least a two-week stay in Omaha right now. Like, they are not the favorite necessarily, but they are a contender. And, Brett, I feel like that's all you ask for.
Yeah, I mean, you get to Omaha. I've been told in the past that the Wildcats own Omaha, so
I have a shirt that says that.
We'll see if that shirt is true.
Yeah, no, I don't think my clothing lies. I'd like to think that my shirts don't lie, but we teased it earlier in the show, Brett. I mean, you and I neither of us are the type of people who say, hey, if ASU loses, that's a win for Arizona, right? Like, it's not. Like, that's not us. Like, we root for Arizona. We don't say root against ASU. But this had come up over the last week. ASU football is kind of in the news for possible, alleged, of course, recruiting violations, that they had brought players on campus, or high school players on campus, during the COVID time where there was a dead period. And then there's more reports from The Athletic, how they perhaps, allegedly, of course, we have to hedge this, paid for players to watch them in the Las Vegas Bowl when they lost to San Jose State, or which, who was it that they lost to in Vegas?
Fresno State.
Fresno State, one of the schools that, like, why are you losing to them? But allegedly they paid for players to come watch that game. And again, we're not the people who celebrate ASU losses as if they're wins for Arizona. But man, oh man, like, if this stuff is true, the Devils are in trouble.
Yeah, I tweeted out on the Twitter machine that, like, imagine cheating and paying players to watch you lose your bowl game to Fresno State. Yeah, it all kind of escalated quickly. There was, like, you know, George Reitzer was tweeting out some stuff, hinting that something big was coming down, and then immediately said this wasn't even full yet, and hinting that there's even more to come. But boy, if half of what has been reported is true, they're in trouble. And the thing that, if you're an Arizona State fan, that makes you, you know, really concerned is the fact that very quickly there was a lot of reports from different outlets saying that people are basically lined up that are either in the program providing sources, this information in screenshots, you know, providing the receipts, videos of people having illegal recruiting visits, inside the program, and even coaches that left. And, you know, some people have talked about maybe even some coaches got screwed out of a buyout based on where they left to, that maybe means they're, you know, mad at Ray Anderson. And like, I forget if it was Michael Lev or somebody else in the local media was pointing out that, like, David Shaw was going on the record commenting
about
Doug
Heller's
ASU's
article. Or was that,
oh, yeah,
or that was that the, was that the Yahoo article? I don't want to put it in Doug Heller. I think it was the Yahoo article. Pete Bamel's article.
The fact that rival head coaches were going on the record, and a lot of media people very quickly, or people connected into the recruiting world in the West Coast, were saying how, like, it was not a well kept secret. It sure feels like there are some angry people that have provided a lot of evidence that means, you know, I'm on the record. I think all schools cheat in some form. It's just how brazenly you do it. But boy, if your culture is so bad that you have people ready to burn down your entire program and, like, screen grabbing things and sending that to the NCAA, and, like, there's people lined up out the door ready to, like, back that claim up, like, it seems like there is. Oof. You know, there's a difference between, like, what is alleged and what can be proven, right? And, like, mm-hmm. you know, the difference for, like, Sean Miller in Arizona, even with all the FBI stuff, even with the wiretaps, there's no actual, you know, the great thing is that about that whole thing is there's no actual evidence tying Sean Miller to anything. If anything, all of the notice of allegations made Sean Miller look better personally, even if, like, it's plausible deniability. And it sounds like from the reporting, granted, if it's true, and it may not be, it may be inaccurate, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be something that's possible. That doesn't make it be a 4-year NCAA investigation.
No, and I wrote a thing for AZ Does Storm, and it was basically titled "An Arizona Fan's Guide to Handling an NCAA Investigation," right? Like, Arizona has been there. Every investigation is different. But I'm not going to lie and say that I didn't, like, what's the best way to phrase this? I don't take joy in all this. And I feel like, just like it was for Arizona when it was Sean Miller, let the investigation play out. Like, what's alleged is not say what's true or what happened. Whatever can be proven, that's what we'll go with, right? Like, if we're going to say, as Arizona fans, if you can't prove this, it didn't happen, whether you believe it or, like, whether you believe it's true or not, if it's not proven it didn't happen, cool. If that's your baseline, then we need to hold to the same standard for ASU, right? Like, I think that's mm-hmm. fair.
Yeah.
But if you look at just, oh, man. Like, there's a dossier, and, like, it sounds like from other reports, there's a dossier that was handed over, and it might have been from bitter ex-coaches. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, right? They didn't hand over a binder full of blank sheets of paper. They handed over something that caused this investigation and caused this reporting to happen. So, and I've seen ASU be like, oh, it's just not that bad. It's just, like, a couple of scholarships. Like, if you are determined to have cheated for a competitive advantage, that's a problem. Like, ignore the fact that it was during a COVID pandemic where the whole reason they had a dead period is because they didn't want to spread a deadly virus, which ASU lost, what, nearly a month because they had a COVID outbreak? Like, that doesn't look good. But if the idea is that, like, for Arizona, if you want to try to compare, I mean, you can't because it's different things for Arizona basketball. But what we know for Arizona basketball, right, was, I guess we could say, is Book Richardson took money as a bribe, and he didn't give it to the players. He just kept it himself. Was it Mark Phelps? They changed some transcripts. Like, that was it. There was no money handed to players. There was nothing like that. It was still bad, and Arizona should be punished for what happened under that, you know, under that administration, under Sean Miller. But if you're ASU, the allegations that are out there are that you brought players on campus for official visits when there was supposed to be a dead period, which is not cool. That you maybe paid for them to come, which is basically handing them money. Like, so like, there's no difference there. Like, you basically paid players to come to ASU and visit. And then you did everything you could to try to hide it. Like, you knew it was wrong. And you still, like, you were trying, you were thinking about turning off cameras and doing, you know, back alleyways and staircases. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. And this is Wildcat Radio 2.0. Like, we're obviously not ASU fans. And I've told people, I'm like, let the investigation play out. Like, you have to. And I, the same way I treat Arizona, I'm going to treat ASU. But 100%, I'm a lot less nervous about where this one goes than I was, or still am, actually, with Arizona's situation. Like, hey, wherever this goes, let it happen. Like, I'm cool with it.
For Arizona and for Sean Miller, it was always the, like, vague culture of compliance. Like, basically is a wide berth for there's smoke, but we don't know if there's ever actually any fire. And then how much do you assert judgment there? There sure seems like there's a high chance, based on what's reported, that it's not a question of a culture of compliance. They are actively and with clear delineated evidence. There is a basically somebody handed over a index binder that says ASU's recruiting cheating plus COVID protocol disruption or, like, you know, mismanagement addendum.
If what's alleged is true, it ain't good. Like, there's not a lot of ways out of this one.
And, like, yeah, so every one of those things is, like, its own violation. And then on top of that, there's a culture of compliance, and you can't argue the culture of compliance when there's evidence that potentially the head coach is, there's reports that Herm Edwards is in the loop on this, right? Like, at least on the illegal visits. Like you said, I'm not somebody that wants to dance on people's graves or throw stones in glass houses and all that. But if you go back to my Twitter feed when the FBI thing, and the only pleasure I take in this is a bunch of people that were casting those stones. And I think when the FBI raids happened, I said, maybe don't throw stones in glass houses. Yeah, it's potentially bad for Arizona. But, you know, what goes around comes around. For those people that were kind of maybe less reasoned, I don't feel bad for them withering and twisting a little bit.
How often does what goes around come in? How often does the shoe fit so perfectly on the other foot? And it's all alleged, and we don't know where this thing's going to go with ASU. Like, it seems like this investigation doesn't I'll be honest. Like, this investigation doesn't start without some alleged dossier. Like, I'm sure there's something. Like, there's smoke. You know, how much fire there is? We don't know. We'll find out.
But, I mean, somebody gave them pictures of the fire.
Right, like, there's supposed to be, like, receipts and, like, there's everything there. Like, it seems like, we don't know, but it seems like there's a pretty cut and dry case for something happened. But in terms of, like, if you're looking from the Arizona perspective, how often does just the shoe fit so perfectly under their foot? We're like, it's been, not less than 4 years since the Book Richardson thing happened. That was the end of 2017, like, September 2017. It's like, in such a short amount of time, it's like, we get to see how ASU fans handle the same thing. like that's kind of fun. Like, if there's any hypocrisy, and fans are going to be fans, like, Arizona fans, ASU fans are all the same. Like, I'm not going to pretend like, oh, Arizona fans are a higher brow. Like, they would not, you know, an ASU fan, you know, no. But it seems so perfectly.
Adam, pander to our audience better. You're failing.
But no, how often does it seems so perfect, right? Like, oh, now I get to see how you all handle this. You know, also, if you're saying, like, maybe back then, like, how dare, like, what's wrong with you? You're saying, hey, wait for investigation, this and that. Like, he's guilty. It's out there. Well, now you're going to be like, hey, wait for the investigation. Like, come on. Like, we have been there. ASU's there now. And I don't feel good for them. Like, I'm not feeling bad for them either, but I don't feel good for them because what we know and what it sounds like, if there's a dossier which has been alleged that's just like receipts, images, emails, the very things that Arizona fans are saying, hey, that doesn't exist. If it does for ASU, they are in trouble. That's all. Yeah.
Well, first off, what does misery love? But yeah, I mean, if we're 4 years removed and we still don't know what ultimate ruling is finally going to come down from the NCAA for the Sean Miller era. But that took 4 years. And I think where we're at today, even with Sean Miller being fired and all of the fallout from that, I think Arizona's basketball program, even if there is, you know, an expected level of sanctions, I think they're going to get off lighter than what ASU football is going to get, and much quicker. Because if there is all this evidence, there's no argument. You clean right. house. The whole athletic department and coaching staff is gone, right? And sanctioned. And if that evidence is so clear, the investigation isn't a 4-year investigation into like, is this true or not? It's more, how much more is there? And that's a completely different thing.
So, we'll see where that goes. Obviously, like, I don't know. ASU losses are not wins for Arizona unless Arizona beat ASU. I feel like we both agree on that. But it will be interesting to see what happens to the Sun Devils here, especially given the context of, hey, they had a little bit of fun at Arizona's expense for the last 4 years, which, hey, I'm not saying wasn't deserved, you know, or warranted. But it'll be interesting to see it play out on the other side of things. So,
well, can we just say that as true Arizona fans, we are very excited to see the Manchurian candidate sleeper cell Antonio Pierce, Arizona Wildcat alumni.
Hey, bear down, Antonio.
Playing the long con.
That was my favorite. I got some tweets about it. Like, he was playing the long con. I'm like, like, I'm sure that's not the case, but man, it's funny to think about that. He, oh, we'll see. Like, you know, the best case scenario, that game that happened at the end of 2020 doesn't count. It is vacated. And hey, you know, there was no Territorial Cup in 2020.
Vacated from the record books and also our hearts and minds, Adam.
If they could do that, do like the Men in Black, just like, this didn't happen, because like, I drank a lot that night and I still remember enough to know what happened, like what the final score was.
Oh yeah, I was with you that night. Yeah. We had a few.
We did, but we did not have enough. But
there was never enough that night.
No, not for that night. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for our Wildcat Radio 2.0 this week. Everyone, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. You know, Arizona baseball this weekend, they're playing in the College World Series. Make sure you watch those games. They're on ESPN, playing Vanderbilt to start on Saturday. Hopefully they win that game, but it's a pretty tough bracket. We'll see where one of the best offices in college baseball goes. We appreciate you listening. Make sure you are subscribing to us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to rate us, also do that. We would appreciate it, especially if it's good ratings. But otherwise, whatever happens with Arizona baseball and football and basketball, there's a lot going on. We're going to talk about it next week. But until then, remember to bear down.
Bear down.